Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me, and hope you're all doing well out there in Bulls Nation. We're only 48 hours away from the trade deadline closing, so I'm coming back at you guys to talk trades and basically any other Bulls news out that's floating around out there. So joining me today to talk Bulls and the deadline is my old friend Morten Jensen. Morten, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. It's always exciting this time of year when the trade rumors are sort of floating around, whether it's your team or not. It's always a fun time to be an NBA fan. And at this point, with the Bulls looking like being sellers, it's probably extra fun.
Yeah. No, it's always lovely to see a team just nuke itself. It's at least entertaining, isn't it?
Definitely entertaining. Hopefully it's not too much of a nuke job, but hopefully they are just sell off the pieces that they don't necessarily need, and that's what they've been rumored to doing. So what I plan on doing today is just going through some of the names that will be on the block for the Chicago Bulls, and then just talking about some other interesting ideas that maybe the Bulls can entertain. We can get into some fantasy type ideas from our side. I know you definitely love doing that. So I've got a few questions from some listeners that have definitely come up with some interesting theories that I'm sure you'll love going through. So We'll go through all the players that are on the block, as well as answering some listener questions that I did get through about the trade deadline. So let's rip into it. Let's start with Robin Lopez. So he's probably, he's definitely the biggest name in terms of stature, but he's also one of the main pieces that I guess the Bulls will be looking to move at the trade deadline. Casey Johnson sort of reporting that talks between teams or rival teams and the Bulls around Lopez have sort of intensified, which I find interesting. How do you feel about this? Do you think it's likely that Robin Lopez gets moved at all? I was kind of shocked personally to see, you know, reports being floated out there that trade talks have intensified.
Well, before I answer that, I have a question because I did not catch last night's Bulls game, and I'm looking at the box score to see he only played 13 minutes. Did he go out with an injury, or was he pulled off?
No, I was going to mention this after, but he may have played his last Bulls game, and the reason for that is he got ejected. He picked up two techs, pretty much, and got thrown out of the game. Actually, he just crossed the line and got that white line fever and just went nuts and started berating the refs, Joakim Noah style, back to 2014, if Bulls fans can remember back in 2014, Joakim Noah storming the court there against the Kings, pointing at the refs and getting thrown out. It was sort of a similar scene there with Robin Lopez. Got very, very angry and got tossed out of the game. And that pretty much enabled the Bulls to lose the game because they were up by 21 at one point. But after the second half, the tank was in and they couldn't get it done without Lopez. So that may have been his biggest achievement as a Bull.
See, that even without his lasting legacy. He's helping them. He's that good of a guy.
Well, definitely. He's just a completely a team guy, and it's one of the reasons why I want to keep him. He's very much a team guy, but his last game as a Bull may have been against the Kings, and if he goes out in that fashion, getting ejected and helping the Bulls win that or lose that game, I should say, against the lowly Kings, and that's a pretty nice legacy.
Oh, he should get a statue. That's amazing.
Funny you say that, because I joked about that on Twitter. They should be putting a statue at the front of UC for Robin Lopez for potentially helping the tank there.
With just his hair.
Maybe just put a wig on the Jordan statue or something like that. Just getting back to Robin Lopez, though, right. and the fact that he may be a trade candidate. Do you buy these rumors at all that he will be moved? I've been pretty adamant that the Bulls won't move him, but I'll be surprised if they do. But having said that, there is talk about the Bulls potentially doing it. Do you think it goes down?
I think they're going to try to make it go down simply because he is a difference maker. Fans are looking at Robin Lopez. They're looking at his numbers and they're going, oh, he can't be a major difference maker. He's just one of those additional glue guys, whatever, we won't miss him, yada, yada, yada. Well, you know, fact is, and as you pointed out, Robin is really essential to these Bulls. So he's one of those guys who can actually turn a game around just by doing all the dirty work and doing all the things that don't show up in a stat sheet. And I think teams know this. And I think if you're a team out there who's looking to bolster your front court a little bit and you may have a bad contract, but you're willing to move it for a, let's say, a late first or a couple seconds or whatever. I don't think he may, I don't know if he fetches that much, but I think they'd be intrigued. I had a similar conversation about this very briefly on Twitter with Mark Deeks, and, you know, as Deeks pointed out correctly, as well as, you know, you can mimic a Nikola Mirotic trade with Robin Lopez simply because the return probably isn't there. Nico is just that much more of a better player, really. So it depends, what are you going to get for Lopez? The Bulls could increase the worth if they're willing to take on a deal that goes a year further, such as Jan Mahinmi, but I don't think that it would be in their interest to do so. So they would probably settle for a similar deal for a worse player and then a second rounder, which, you know, I guess is okay. Personally, I think it would be nice to see them get a little bit more, but if the market isn't there, it isn't there. And right now, you are going all in on the tank, so I would do it in a pinch.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point as well, if you look at the top of the standings and you think about teams that may be looking at a big man to acquire at the trade deadline, there's not a lot of them that really need centers. So the Bulls will be hoping for a first round pick for Robin Lopez, and really the only first round pick that you're going to get for him is one likely to be late in the first round there. So if you look at those teams towards the top of the standings, not really teams that are looking for a traditional lumbering center that sort of drops back on pick and roll, can really protect the rim but doesn't really space the floor, can't really guard out high, these sorts of things. So he doesn't necessarily fit what teams are chasing for in terms of player, and he's not exactly the cheapest guy going around from a contract perspective. So right. Combining all that, everything you've said and everything I've just noted there, that's to me why, if I logically think about it, I don't really see a trade going down with Robin Lopez. So I'm kind of mystified a bit as to why this trade talks between the Bulls and Lopez is sort of going somewhere, if it does at all. So we'll see. Who knows what will happen, but I'm not predicting he will be moved in. But, you know, stranger things have happened. But one Bull that I do think could be moved, or at least in my opinion, is probably the most sought-after Bull, or should be, is Justin Holiday. So, yeah. To me, he's kind of redundant on this Bulls team in the sense that he's on a two-year deal, including the season we're playing at the moment. So only 1 year after this deal. He's a guy that can come in and shoot threes. He shoots about 37% from three, so just above league average. And he can defend a bit. And given he's a wing, even you've got those skill sets, that's a player teams want. And that's actually a player teams looking to bolster their playoff rotation may be interested in. So I'm surprised there hasn't been more chatter about Justin Holiday. Do you think he gets moved at all?
Yeah, I think him and Lopez are just the two strongest candidates for the Bulls at this point. Justin Holiday, I've been personally invested in seeing going to OKC because I kind of want to see OKC get a complete starting lineup in there, and they need a shooting guard who can play both sides of the court, and Holiday fits in pretty well there. I think you and I spoke about this at some point where we had kind of a tough time figuring out, like, what's the worth for Holiday? Like, what can you realistically get? And I'm still not sure. Like, are we talking about maybe San Antonio's pick at 26? Is that too high for him? Is he going for a second rounder? The thing is, like, when you look at his line, you go, oh, well, that, you know, teams are probably not going to pay a whole lot for that. But then you factor in what you just said, which is completely accurate, that teams are in need of wings. Wings have become sort of a hot commodity in the NBA because there aren't so many of them anymore. So does that increase the worth to the point where the Bulls could maybe fetch a late first round draft pick for him? I think it's all about gauging his worth. I don't know where you land on his worth. Is he worth a first, or is he just a clear-cutty second rounder worth?
He's probably worth closer to a second rounder, a decent second round, or something around the 35 mark. But again, if there's teams trying to find a competitive advantage and maybe you can get a couple buyers sort of leveraging against each other, maybe the Bulls can drum up a 28th pick or something like that. The Golden State Warriors are reportedly trying to bolster their bench ahead of the ahead of the trade deadline here. So I do wonder if there's a scenario where the Bulls can sort of take on maybe a Nick Young or someone that's not really contributing like that to the Warriors, and maybe they send back their first round pick, which is going to be the 30th pick in the draft, pretty close to a second round pick. Maybe they would be interested in that. Obviously, they've got a history with Justin Holiday. He was part of their title team, I think their first title team. So they know him. He fits definitely with what they do. So maybe that's the best case scenario in terms of getting Justin Holiday for a first. Like it would be literally the last pick in the first, because I think he's more scheduled to go for that second rounder.
I think you're right. And Golden State is intriguing. He's had a history with Golden State. He's played there definitely before, which means that he's a known commodity in Golden State. Which again,
and the
means
Bulls and Warriors obviously have a recent history of doing deals together.
They do, which is unfortunate for the Bulls, but great for the Warriors. Yes. And also, I mean, look, this is sort of a joke, and it's still not at the same time. I'm also kind of, if I'm a Bulls fan, I'm a little bit worried about attaining second rounders or acquiring second rounders, because they're not attained. Like, they're traded away in bigger deals all the time. The Bulls are just giving those up like candy. You're looking at the pick that they gave up to OKC in the McDermott-Taj Gibson trade. That went to New York, which is right now slotted to be, like, number 36. That is essentially, if we were looking at last year as well, with the Jordan Bell pick, which was 38th, right? Those are very early second rounders. You could even argue, at least last year when it was a deep draft, it was a pseudo first rounder, like a very late pseudo first rounder. And when I'm looking at again, this year, the Bulls are giving up what could be the 36th pick or even higher, assuming, you know, they drop down even more, which we are expecting them to do. That adds up. I mean, really, it does. That's giving up a lot of unnecessary talent, really, potential talent. So if the Bulls are to acquire a second rounder, I would want to somehow see them just keep it, really, and go, okay, we're all in on this draft thing, because it just seems like they don't care about second rounders.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, and I had a nice long rant about that on the last podcast after they obviously included that second round pick in the Mirotić trade. So the second round pick that you were referencing there, the 36th pick, which is currently slated to be drafted at, that was obviously included as part of the Cameron Payne trade to OKC, which the Knicks now own, when OKC traded for Mello, I should say. So they sent that pick to New York. So obviously the Bulls have a history of sending out second rounders. But at the same time, whilst that is true, if the return for Justin Holiday is a decent second and maybe a not so decent second, then you still have to do that. Obviously, I would have concerns about the Bulls not necessarily valuing that pick or doing anything substantive with that pick. But at the same time, if that's his value and that's the correct play to make, then you've got to do it irrespective. Yep. If we like to joke around and the Bulls, you know, having a history of dealing these second rounders, you still got to do it if that's the right deal.
Mm. I agree. By the way, I have sort of a funny proposition here. So we both know Jimmy Butler pretty well in terms of how he is as a player. And I kind of got a funny idea last night, which was I haven't been impressed by Minnesota's point guard play. And Justin Holiday could swing in and kind of take over Jimmy's spot in the rotation, and Jimmy could move to point. I think there would be enough ball handling for Jimmy, and having Tyus Jones and Jeff Teague as some sort of super sub off the bench to go around. Would that be intriguing for Minnesota at all? Would they be willing to give up like a protected first-round pick? Maybe not the one this year, because that's going to OKC. No, wait a second. It's from OKC. So Minnesota is currently slotted to have it at 21. But let's say OKC gets better during the course of the season, and it lands in like the 23-24 range. Could that be intriguing?
I don't know. And it's hard to say, because we don't know, I guess, the pressure on Tibbs necessarily to win, and whether Tibbs values second or, you know, late first rounders himself. Right. He obviously acquired one, a future first round pick for Ricky Rubio, which I believe is the pick that they're getting from OKC, which the Jazz had. They're giving away their first round pick to the Atlanta Hawks, which is the 25th pick at the moment. So they've sort of got one coming in, one coming out. So It's hard to say whether they would want to give away one of those picks. Maybe if they had both available, they'd be more tempted to do so. But I'd still say it's probably too high of a pick to give up for someone like Justin Holliday, even though he does make a lot of sense to that rotation.
Yeah, you're probably right. We are looking at like the absolute late 20s, early 30s.
Definitely. And like a team like Toronto and Houston, they don't actually own their first rounder. So Toronto will be sending their pick to Brooklyn, and Houston will be sending theirs to Atlanta. So thinking about those teams that will be receiving those late first, they're probably not ones that actually would want Justin Holliday. They're obviously lottery teams. They don't necessarily have a need for someone like Justin Holliday. So I can't imagine them actually trading that late first for someone like Holliday. So I think it's more likely he goes for a second round pick, if he goes at all. But it's potentially, like you said, maybe Holliday and Lopez can be packaged up together. Maybe that changes the value proposition of a trade.
Potentially,
potentially, but I probably don't see it, to be honest with you. But look, I've got a first question here from a listener, and I guarantee you I'm going to screw up his last name because it's a Portuguese last name. And I have a history of blowing them on this podcast. I always stuff them up, but let me give this a go. So this one comes in from Bruno Guimarães. How did that go, Mort? Was that close?
I'm not sure, but it sounded good. So I'm just going to go.
It sounded good enough.
It sounded good. I'm just going to go all in and say I think you did well, Mark.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I nailed it. So let me know, Bruno. But Bruno asks, he's got a question in relation to Robin Lopez. And he asks, if the Bulls should trade Lopez, should they try to develop Lowry as a center? So this is an interesting one. And I've got an opinion on it, but I thought I would get your take first.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've seen that take a lot. And a lot of people are just, Lowry is going to be a center regardless. Like, that's his, he's destined to become like a new age center. I don't know where I stand on that. Honestly, it really depends entirely on who you have at the four. I think, I don't think you can look at it in a vacuum like that. I really dig him as a power forward, really. Especially if let's say you end up with the second pick and you get a guy like DeAndre Ayton in there at center. You know, then he, to me, that's a wonderful, very big front line who is still agile enough to shoot threes and run the court and all that. So the size wouldn't be a problem, which means that I would definitely lean in that scenario to Lowry becoming or remaining a power forward. But if you get like a super power forward in there, I don't know who that is. It's not Marvin Bagley, folks. Let me just tell you that right off the bat. But if you get like a superb power forward and you can slide Lowry to center for stretches at least, I don't think he's defensively strong enough to play that position. Well, he is strong, but I mean, good enough defensively to play it. That could be taught, however. So I'm not sure where I land on it. I do think if you put a gun to my head, I would look at him as a power forward moving forward.
I think that's a fair take, and to add to what you've sort of said there, it'll also come down to Lowry Markkanen. And what I mean by that is, I mean, most people were sort of projecting Anthony Davis to slide over to center at some point and be a full-time center.
Oh, good point.
And the reason he hasn't done it is because he doesn't want to do it. Yeah. And the reason why the Pelicans have sort of consistently invested in big centers to put next to him is because Davis has been reluctant to be a full-time four. So who knows how Markkanen will feel about being a full-time center going forward. But if Anthony Davis feels that way, then maybe Lowry Markkanen may feel the same way. The other thing to consider, which you mentioned before around, that big man position and, really trending or, potentially landing someone like DeAndre Ayton, and then that would, I guess, pigeonhole Lowry Markkanen into being a starting power forward. Something you also have to consider is how the game is trending. Will it also continue to trend even smaller? Like, will a guy like Markkanen have to be a five because eventually at one point all power forwards will be smaller guys? Like, maybe that's something to consider, but we don't know the answer to that question now. Maybe the league doesn't trend any smaller. It may not. So I think when you combine all those factors, that is probably going to push Markkanen to play center in stretches for certain rotations. But is he going to be a full-time five, someone that the Bulls can count on or lock in as their full-time starter? Probably not. I definitely wouldn't say that's the case next season. I definitely wouldn't say that's the case without Lopez. I think Lopez has been hugely important for Markkanen's development. But I think that's something that hopefully the Bulls can develop him into. But it's, I don't think it's going to be something that Lowry's going to be able to do full-time, at least on his rookie deal. We'll say that.
I think that's a fair take.
Yeah, well, but of course, you know, let's see if he proves us right or wrong. But thanks for your question there, Bruno. Now, we've talked on Lopez and Justin Holiday. They're probably the two best Bulls players remaining on the block that may be moved. But they've also got some other smaller pieces that they may do some deals on. So we don't necessarily need to spend so much time on these. But I guess it has been reported. So we should talk about, I guess, Tony Allen potentially being an option to be traded away. And it's been rumored that he may be headed towards the Oklahoma City Thunder. So you mentioned before that you'd like to see Justin Holiday there. I think that would be a good fit for Holiday, but they also may be interested in Tony Allen. And given that he hasn't played a game for the Bulls and likely won't if he's not traded, he probably won't go to OKC for much of a cost at all.
Right. It all depends, honestly, what you put into an expiring contract. Remember, at the market for expiring deals were really slowing down a couple of years ago. Expiring contracts were just not worth a whole lot anymore. Now, because of the free agency bonanza in 2016, where teams overpaid and locked themselves in to ridiculous degrees, expiring contract has some worth again. Tony Allen is one, but I think it's a very small contract that he's on. I don't remember the amount exactly. Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me, but I want to say it's a minimum deal.
Yeah, right? So that's... I have it right here. It's 2.1 mil. So that's essentially nothing. I'm not sure what you can get. It's probably just going to be one of those things where you get a similar expiring back and maybe a second, like a heavily protected second rounder for your trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. If the Bulls do move Tony Allen to OKC or anywhere else, it'll probably be for some crummy second round pick that'll have some huge protections on it that you probably won't get. And you'll just be getting rid of him just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
The Bulls definitely won't be playing him on the roster. So it kind of makes sense just to get rid of him for the sake of it. And you can get, you know, if you can take a shot on a second round pick that may or may not convey to you, you may as well do it because you're going to waive him anyway. And I think the way this thing's going to play out with Tony Allen is a team like OKC that definitely needs someone who can defend on the perimeter after they've lost Andre Robertson. They will probably wait right until the end of the deadline to sort of field some other offers. Maybe they try to, you know, acquire someone like Avery Bradley or someone like that that can sort of step in for Robertson for a little bit. And if they can't get that deal, then maybe they'll come to the Bulls right at the end and say, all right, we'll give you some heavily protected second for Tony Allen. So I wouldn't be expecting much for Tony Allen at all. And I sort of feel the same way about Jameer Nelson. So it's been reported that the Bulls don't necessarily have an issue in keeping Jameer around. They kind of like the idea of keeping him around. But I also figure if some team were to come calling for a second round pick and say, and says to the Bulls, we need a backup point guard, we'll give you a decent second rounder, I think the Bulls would be more than welcoming a trade for Jameer. How do you feel about that?
I mean, if someone offers a second rounder for Jameer Nelson, you take that so quickly it'll make everyone head spin. So definitely. And if not, again, I actually agree with the Bulls. This is a weird day. Jameer is sort of like Robin Lopez at the point guard position. He's a veteran who knows the value of the game, who knows how to play the game, knows the value in teaching younger guys. I think Chris Dunn would benefit greatly from having Jameer around because right now his mentor is what, Jerry and Grant?
Yeah. Or Cameron Payne, one of the two.
Oh, yeah, that's so much better. Good point.
Professor Payne, that's...
Professor Payne, yeah.
Esteemed company.
Yeah, so, I mean, if there's a deal to be made where they can get, you know, where they can outright win the trade, obviously, like, you do it, especially if you get a pick for it, because picks are good, and the Bulls should get that memo at some point. But if not, I'm okay with Jameer sticking around. No problem.
Yeah, me too. But look, I don't think there's going to be much substantive news around Jimmy Nelson. If it happens, it happens. But if it doesn't, then he'll be a piece that sits on the end of the bench there. But probably a minor move, Bulls fans. Probably nothing really to get excited about there. And same goes for Jerian Grant. So he remains on the trade block. He's been on there for quite a few weeks. Doesn't look like there's many teams looking to buy Jerian Grant, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And with the Bulls looking to invest in Cameron Payne or trying to play Cameron Payne some minutes once he gets back. So he will be returning through the G League very shortly. It would seem like the Bulls are pretty keen on moving on Grant. And one of the listeners at Judgmental User from Twitter, interesting name. Hopefully you're not too judgmental about this podcast and our takes on here. But he asks, with Cameron Payne coming back, and he puts the word yuck in brackets here. He asks, does that mean Jerian is going to get dealt? And I think that's definitely what the Bulls are trying to do. Yep. But do you think he gets dealt at all, Mort?
That's difficult because he's 25 already.
And yeah, he's pretty old.
He's pretty old and he's going into, his fourth season after this one? So teams are going to look at him and go, oh, he's going to be well into his age 26 season. Before we have to make a decision on his future, which is why, again, I'm just going to remind teams out there, seniors are not necessarily a good thing to draft, especially at that age. It's just not always going to become a good thing. If you have a chance for a freshman, do it. There's more potential, and he will have more trade value down the line. It's just an age thing. Having said that, I do think that he is... I think they're trying as hard as you mentioned, to trade him. Whether they find a deal or not, that's really the big thing. What would you put in terms of worth for Jerian? There's no way in hell he's going to fetch a first rounder, and probably not even a early second rounder. So, are we looking for a pick in the 40s?
Maybe that's probably your best case, but I think the play here is probably is an inclusion in a deal.
Yeah,
maybe they include Grant in a trade or with Justin Holiday or Robin Lopez or something like that to sweeten the pie. They obviously don't have any seconds to...
Does it sweeten necessarily it, though?
Second. Yeah, you could sell it as such. Probably doesn't sweeten it that much. Not really, but you could sort of point to that, I guess, or try to negotiate it as that way. But it probably doesn't sweeten the pie, to be honest with you.
I always have this team ready to mention because they'll fix everyone. And that's Brooklyn? The Spurs, man.
I thought you were going to say Brooklyn.
No. I mean, look, they're actually getting there. I have a feeling that they might get there. But if you look at Minnesota, they have pick right now number 21 and number 55. In a pinch, would you do Grant for 55?
I guess. Maybe. Yeah, sure. Why not? It's nothing that gets me excited at all, but it would be a trade.
It would be a trade. Yeah. No, but I mean, I'm kind of thinking that, that was the Minnesota. I think San Antonio has number 26 and 56. Sorry. But 56 then, so one pick later. 56 for Jerian Grant? I wouldn't be excited about it, especially considering the whole trade. He was a key part in the Derrick Rose trade, which seems a little bit weird, but those are the cards that you're dealt. And 56 is you can get a... I'm guessing you can use the draft and stash method there.
Yeah, I guess so. But at 56, I'll probably keep Grant in that instance, to be honest with you, and hopefully. Maybe with another offseason under his belt, he can sort of slide back into that second unit and develop into a capable backup point guard, which I think he has been for most of this season. He's really struggled any time he's been asked to be a starter. And unfortunately, throughout his Bulls career, there's been times where he's had to be a starter. And it's quite clear that he's not a starting point guard. It's debatable whether he's a point guard at all, but he's definitely a bench piece. And I think he can be an okay bench piece. So I don't necessarily have a problem keeping Grant. I know a lot of Bulls fans don't like Grant because like I said, he's been asked to do too much and he's often failed, and that, I guess, carries a negative a negative connotation when you hear the word Jerian Grant, but I think he's still got something that the Bulldogs can maybe develop into. But if it's for a pick 55 or a 56 or something like that, I probably don't do that deal, to be honest with you.
Mm. No, I get that. So it really depends on what you prefer at the point guard position. Chris Dunn is the starter moving forward. So the thing is, would you rather have Cameron Payne or Jerian Grant as your backup? Because that right now is the play. At that, I mean, if we're looking at it through that lens, then yeah, to me, Jerian Grant is the backup point guard as well, because Payne has shown us nothing so far. Obviously, he's been injured, so that's not necessarily his fault. But when he played last year, it was really bad. I think this season is going to determine it, really, because if Payne is going to come back soon and he plays significantly better and he proves that he was, he had some worth to him and he's able to hit the three ball at a higher volume and at a higher clip than Grant is, or Grant is capable of, yeah, then it becomes a debate at the very least. But you can't run with all three, so...
No. You can't, and yeah. Particularly if you keep Nelson around, or even looking in the offseason to add another veteran point guard.
Yep.
Can't carry that many point guards, and they'll definitely need to consolidate. But I think Jerian Grant being on the block says more about the Bulls wanting to have a look at Cameron Payne than it does Jerian Grant. I think if they had taken a look at Cameron Payne this season, and if he was playing poorly, then I think he's the one on the block. But probably luckily for him, he hasn't played, and I guess there is still some mystique around what he potentially could be, for whatever is reason. Well, to the Bulls front office, it appears there
is. Oh, okay, yeah.
Fair
enough.
I guess I should stipulate that part, but I think that's why Grant is on the block. But anyways, look, that's probably too much time about Jerry and Grant. I don't think he gets moved, but
again,
we shall see. Stranger things
have happened. We should have a two-minute limit whenever we're discussing Jerry and
Grant. Yeah, I was probably bad on my part. I should have cut you off long before.
You're
that,
a bad host.
Look, I ranted myself, but anyways, let's move along to something definitely more interesting, and let's talk about another 25-year-old, and I'm talking about Rodney Hood here. So it was reported earlier today, my time at least, that the Bulls were one of three teams that were interested in trading for Rodney Hood. So that was reported there by Tony Jones of the Salt Lake Tribune. So the Bulls are one team that are interested in Hood. And I certainly have an opinion on this. I wrote some words about it on Bulls HQ earlier today. I'm not a big fan of going after someone like Rodney Hood. But again, I would like to hear your thoughts on it before I start ranting about it.
So Brian Toporek and I, who run the NBA podcast, where you've been on a couple of times at least, we discussed Rodney Hood here in a recent episode. And we kind of agreed that, you know, his name is intriguing, mostly because he's young and he's productive. But when you dig into the numbers, he's primarily just a scorer. He's a 6'8 wing, and he's a bad rebounder. He's not a strong playmaker. His defense is so. It's gotten a little bit better, I will give him that. But he is primarily a shooter slash field scorer. He doesn't get to the line a whole lot. So what you get is essentially, from a statistical standpoint, something very similar and perhaps a little bit inferior to Zach LaVine. Where you go, okay, so let's assume the Bulls trade for Rodney Hood. Then you have two guys in Hood and LaVine who are overwhelming scorers, but they are not a whole lot more. They're not strong defenders. To Zach LaVine's credit, he's become a much better rebounder this year than he was previously, so I can't knock him for that. But I can't ask, you know, I can't question whether it's sustainable or not. If it turns out not to be, because it's still a pretty small sample size, if it turns out he's just on a hot streak on the glass, and that is not something that's going to continue, then you'll have two guys who aren't great rebounders, despite having decent size from size and athleticism from their positions. And LaVine can play make a little bit, but he's not this type of point guard that Minnesota for a while thought that he was. And Rodney Hood is in the same boat. He's not a playmaker. So then you have these two scorers who does nothing else really but score, and both are going to look at contract extensions for this upcoming summer. To me, that's not an optimal situation to be in.
No, and I tend to agree. And a question from a listener out there on Twitter, so at Killerside asks the very poignant question, should the Bulls trade for Hood? And if they do, do you think we can sign him to a decent deal, something in the range of 4 years to 40 to 44 million? Do you think the Bulls should trade for him? And based on what you said, it's probably, you know, probably not leaning that way. But if they do happen to do that deal, do you think they, if they do trade for him, can they retain him for a decent price?
I mean, you would have to ask his agent, honestly. I think Hood is looking at his per 36 numbers, honestly, because he's averaging 16.5 points in 28 minutes, which is good offensive production. So in his mind and in his agent's mind, with starter minutes, he's a 20-point scorer. And that's fair logic to use, especially in contract negotiations. So that will be the argument. And that's worth more in today's league than $11 million a year, especially because the cap spike and all. And the thing is, it only takes one team in a restricted free agency market to come up with a bad deal. And if that guy signs it, you know, then you're screwed. I'm not sure the Bulls could keep him around for $10 to $11 million a year. If they could, then that's a deal I would pursue. But I think what's also important to note here is teams have sort of an idea, like a ballpark idea, before they trade for guys. Because there's this idea that teams don't talk to agents before the summer. That's bull. Let's just get that out of the way immediately. Teams are talking to agents like now and trying to figure out, okay, what are you guys sort of looking for in the summer? Like, what's the ballpark? Because we may have to clear more cap space, whatever. They're trying to position themselves for certain players. So you might have internally with the Bulls an idea of what Rodney Hood is going to ask for this coming summer. And if that number is way too high, then they shouldn't. If that number turns out to be a price they're willing to pay, and it objectively is a decent price tag, then sure, why not? But he does have to come at the right price. I think his trade value is pretty low right now, given that he is an upcoming free agent as well. So you could probably get him. The thing is, do you want to keep him, and at what price?
Look, you pretty much stole my thunder there. A lot of what I was going to say, you already mentioned there. So in terms of my opinion of whether the Bulls should be trading for him, I probably wouldn't trade for him, even if you can get him back for a good number. Because for the exact reasons Morton mentioned there, he probably has too many similarities to Zach LaVine, and I don't necessarily like the idea of having two similar wings at shooting guard and small forward and having to pay them both in the same offseason. I think if one of those guys was still on their rookie deal and you could sort of keep one around like that, then maybe you make that trade for Hood. But given that they're both high volume scorers that don't necessarily fill up the box score outside of scoring, yeah, I'm not really interested. And on Hood, he's a guy that does score, like Morton mentioned. He can shoot well from three. He's shooting about 37% from three over his career, which is a good number. I think it's up around 39% this season. So he's shooting the three ball well, but only averaging like 2.9 rebounds and 1.6 assists. So he's not someone that can create. And we've seen how bad the Bulls have been without Chris Dunn, the fact that they don't have really any creators outside of Dunn. And if for whatever reason, if he was to miss time next season, and you have LaVine out and Hood out there trying to, I guess, create offense but can only do it for themselves, it creates a bit of a problem. And another thing to also consider is that you potentially are reducing your cap flexibility in future years. And we know the Chicago Bulls love touting the word flexibility, and I'm not sure if they would necessarily be thrilled about, I guess, going after someone like Hood and paying him and then having to pay LaVine and potentially missing out on that free agent race. So that's the things the Bulls need to consider. But we'll see if they do this deal. I'm kind of hoping that they don't, but
yeah,
we'll see. But another question for you, Mort, here from one of the listeners. So from Felipe Carvalhais, another Portuguese name that I've certainly butchered here. And Felipe asks, could the Bulls' interest in Hood have anything to do with maybe a LaVine trade being explored? What do you feel about that one?
First of all, I think it's Carvalhais.
Carvalhais, okay.
Yes, I think it's with a J sound instead of an H sound. And could you repeat the question? Because I was looking through our Twitter conversation in regards to how to pronounce his name.
God damn, you weren't even listening.
Yeah. I was sort of, but I thought it was very poor. I think it was very important to get this name correctly because we have been butchering names.
Fair point. But Felipe asks, could the Bulls' interest in Hood have anything to do with maybe a LaVine trade being explored?
Oh, now see, now he's singing my tune because remember what I said last time I was on this podcast, that if you could get a decent first rounder this year for LaVine at the deadline, which I don't think you can at this point. There's not enough data on him. The fact that he's coming up for a new contract is going to diminish his value. But I would at least go all in on that because I'm all in for the draft, 2018 draft. Okay. No, I think the Bulls are in love with LaVine. I don't think they're going to trade him. I think they look at him as the big piece in the Jimmy Butler trade, right or wrong. And because of that, I think they have a, I don't want to say emotional attachment to him, but they do have some sort of idea that they need to validate that trade and thus keep Zach around.
Yeah, again, I agree. The Bulls pretty much come out and said they're keeping him. LaVine has pretty much come out and said he wants to be a Chicago Bull. He wants to be the face of this franchise. And again, getting back to what you just said there, the way they sort of positioned this thing from a PR perspective after the Jimmy Butler trade, he was the main known commodity in that Butler trade. I guess the trade was centered around Zach LaVine, and having him walk in free agency and losing him in free agency, I think that would be a bad look that the Bulls don't necessarily want to take, even if it takes overpaying LaVine. I think they'd prefer to do that than sort of letting him walk away for nothing. So I think the Bulls' interest here in Hood isn't necessarily to do with exploring LaVine trade. I mean, we can debate the merits about doing that. I don't think they should be trading him because I don't think they'll be getting anything well worth it in return. But I think the interest in Hood doesn't really have much to do with, I guess, their disinterest in LaVine. I think they would like to pair the two, even though I don't necessarily agree with that. So, we shall see again. But hopefully that answers your question there, Felipe. But it sounds like me and you, Mort, we're not necessarily too high on Rodney Hood as an option. But what this report about Rodney Hood started getting me thinking about was, there's quite a few guys from the 2014 draft who are currently restricted free agents that haven't got an extension from their team and are probably entering in the free agency period at probably the wrong time. There's not going to be a lot of money out there in this free agency period. So I was thinking about, in conjunction with this Hood report, if there's any, I guess, worthwhile candidate that hasn't received an extension from the 2014 draft that maybe the Bulls should target and maybe look to re-sign. So we've spoken about Rodney Hood and the merits of trading for him and re-signing him, but there's guys like Marcus Smart and Alfred Payton and even Bull Joseph Yusuf Nurkic rather, and maybe even someone like Julius Randle. They're guys from the 2014 draft that are on the block potentially, and they haven't received extensions from their current team. They will be restricted free agents. Do you think there's any merit at all in trading for any of those names?
Not really. And I just want to clarify, because I laughed a little bit when you started mentioning the 2014 draft. It's because I had a similar point to make about the 14 draft. There's a reason why a lot of these names are up in both rumor mills, and you're kind of looking at the contract some of them signed, and you're going, what? Because when you look at it, you have three guys from that class who are very highly touted. You had Andrew Wiggins, Rodney Hood, and Zach LaVine, all of whom, two of whom, I should say, looking for new deals this coming summer. One who's already signed, Wiggins. And the three of them are in a very similar boat, aren't they? Scorers primarily, not necessarily world beaters efficient-wise. Not strong rebounders, not strong playmakers. Pretty pigeonholed in at a certain role. So it's looking over that draft again, you find people who are, you know, decent, but there isn't that one guy that sticks out where you just go, oh yeah, this is the guy. Like you have gems. I mean, you have Aaron Gordon, you have Gary Harris, you have those type of guys. Julius Randle, who I could sort of get behind being a gem, Clint Capella as well. But you don't have those guys who are just world beaters. So if you're looking at the 2014 draft and looking for potential targets, I think you should like go way down the list and see if you can find some of the youngest guys drafted and go, okay, who did not get minutes? Oh, by the way, I should mention Nikola Jokic, by the way, coming from that draft. I forgot. Because you need to find someone who has been not really explored. A lot of these guys are a little bit older. You kind of know what they are because now it's 4 years later. So many of them have like sort of established who they're going to be in this league. And so I'm going to turn it a little bit back to you. Do you think there's a guy in the draft from that draft right now who we've seen plenty of where you go, oh, he's got another layer in him? Because personally, I don't. Not from, I mean, I do with those guys like, you know, Nikola Jokic, obviously. But those guys are going to be locked up. They're not going to be available. So if you look at the guys who are available, is there one guy who sticks out to you? Go, oh, that guy has another tier to reach.
Definitely, definitely. And you stole my thunder again slightly. You mentioned his name, and I was going to leave this to as a separate topic. But I'm glad you brought it up. And that name for me is definitely Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I've got two questions for you around Aaron Gordon from listeners out there. So the first one comes from Furious Jeff on Twitter. He asks, thoughts on a potential Aaron Gordon move to the Bulls, assuming you can move Markkanen into the five? And then as a follow-up to that question, I've got another one here from Hank Hill on Acid. That's a nice Twitter name. Given Gordon's contractual status, what kind of trade would you consider for fair for both teams? So I was hoping you weren't going to mention Aaron Gordon because I wanted to slide that in there and, you know, be really crafty about it. But let's talk about Aaron Gordon now because he may potentially be on the block. He definitely didn't receive an extension. There's a new management team there in Orlando. And given that, you know, they are a new management team, they might be exploring an option there of trading Aaron Gordon. He's a very good player, averaging 18 points, 8 rebounds, having a breakout year. His shooting has certainly improved. His three-point shooting's up to 35% this season. And it's amazing what can happen when you play the player in their right position. So he's now in power forward and he's thriving there. So I'm all in on chasing Aaron Gordon if the price is right. And I love the idea of pairing him with Lauri Markkanen and you know, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. If you want to talk young athletic, that is a young and athletic team. And maybe most importantly, Aaron Gordon is still young. He's actually younger than Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine. So he's only 22. So I love this idea of trying to acquire Aaron Gordon. And how are you thinking about this, and how do you answer these two questions here from Jeff and Hank?
First of all, let's assume the Bulls do trade for Aaron Gordon, and then they get the second pick in the draft, and they take DeAndre Ayton. That's going to be an Arizona front line.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
So there'll be some synergy there. They'll probably work pretty well alongside each other because they know a previous system and thus have an understanding of how they operate. So, but that's kind of besides the point. That was just a little fun notion there. I think the market for Gordon, I could be wrong. I thought he was going into it when, you know, I heard that he was on the block. I thought Denver, because I think in Denver he would just make so much sense. So yeah, I created a trade package and I presented that to Mark Deeks as well, because Deeks is kind of my go-to guy when I'm checking trades. And he was kind of like, you are overrating Gordon's trade value right now, like by a lot, because I threw the kitchen sink at Gordon because I thought that was going to be Denver's move, you know, that their Kyrie move. But the thing is, I mean, he's looking at a new contract, so because of that, his value is going to go down, and obviously he's also. He was tried at the three at small forward, which didn't work out. So he's kind of limited to one position as well. That lowers his value additionally. So it depends. I mean, I don't know exactly where his trade value is at, but I know that it's a little bit less than what I proposed, which I built a package surrounding Trey Lyles and Malik Beasley and potentially a first rounder. And Kenneth Faried with the potential to take Aaron Gordon and Bismack Biyombo back, because then it would lower Gordon's value. Like, if you were willing to take Bismack Biyombo back in a trade, then you could argue, oh, okay, then we can get Gordon a little bit cheaper because you take on a bad deal. And the reaction I got to that was, oh, you're overpaying. You're significantly overpaying, which I thought was interesting because that means you can probably get him for a package that makes some sort of sense if you're the Bulls. What that package should be, not sure yet. I mean, when you look over the Bulls' assets and in terms of where the Magic are, you can't really mix and match because you don't know what the Magic are doing. Given that they want Gordon not out of there, but given that they're considering moving Gordon, is that because they want to hit the restart button again? Or is it because they actually want veterans? Like, we don't know where that new direction is because Rob Hennigan is no longer there. So it depends on what Orlando is looking for. It depends on what the Bulls are willing to give up for Gordon specifically. And you also have to factor in that Gordon and Levine being extended at the same point or re-signed by the same summer, like, you would have to pigeonhole those two in long term. And it also means a significant amount of cap space goes away for future acquisitions. So you have to be damn sure that he's your guy. And if you are not, if you're just on the fence about it, you shouldn't trade for him because you're going to lock yourself up. So I don't know where they stand on Aaron Gordon. I agree with you. I think he's amazing. I think he's awesome. I do think he has that other tier to reach. But I don't know what the deal is. I just don't know what the deal is. What do you give up? Like, you're not giving up Markkanen because the idea is to pair those two guys. You're not giving up the 2018 pick because that might actually be number one. Like, what do you give up? Where is the additional value coming from?
Yeah, and that's exactly what that was my point. I love the idea of acquiring Gordon. I love pairing him with Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen. But what it's going to cost, just because the Bulls don't really have anything else that will probably tempt Orlando to making a deal, it's probably going to cost their first round pick this year, the 2018 Bulls pick. It's not going to be the Pelicans pick. Orlando will probably come calling for that Bulls pick, and the Bulls should not trade their pick for Aaron Gordon.
Nope.
So I don't think there is a deal that exists that is fair for both teams, unfortunately, there, Hank. And whilst I love the idea of pairing Gordon with Markin and Jeff, I don't think the deal exists as much as I wanted to, unfortunately. But I just love the idea of pairing Gordon with this young Bulls squad. And I've seen it mentioned on Twitter, and I was very glad to see these questions come through around Gordon, because it's just one of those fantasy topics that I like thinking about personally. But unfortunately, I don't think he's going to be a Bull as much as I'd love to see it, because I don't think there's really any fair deal to be had between these teams. But
Hang on then. There might be one. No, but I'm looking at, you know, let's play it out a little bit.
Okay.
The Bulls, let's say the Bulls get a high pick. Okay. They're probably not going to end up with, I don't know if they're going to end up with number one. Where are they at right now? I'm just going to go to
check. They're at pick six, and they're two games behind the first overall pick.
Okay. So it's possible. So if they get the worst record in the league, they're guaranteed a top four pick. In that case, I definitely do not move that for Aaron Gordon. But, okay, so let's assume they're going to get a top four pick. They're going to get a difference maker. They're going to get a very good rookie. Lauri Markkanen is going to get better. Chris Dunn is going to get better. Zach LaVine is going to get better. So the pick next year is probably closer to what? 9, 10, maybe 11? So do you gamble? And do you go, you can have our 2019 pick for Aaron Gordon with a top three protection?
I think what Orlando says to that is, no, we're not doing that deal. We want to see, if we're dealing someone like Gordon, who's still young at 22, we want to see something that's going to impact this roster for the next season. We don't want to be waiting another 12 months for a future pick that may or may not convert. So, yeah, I don't think that deal goes down.
It depends on what they have on the table. Like, if everything they've gotten in has been underwhelming, and this deal is clearly the best, and they're not really interested in re-signing him as it is, then it might be a good idea. Because if they re-sign him to a much larger deal, like $100 million or $80 million, whatever, that value is going to reflect that. Like, his trade value is going to reflect that. Because whenever you sign for big money, your trade value goes a little bit down. So maybe.
Yeah. I mean, just maybe. That's true, but look, I just don't see it personally. I'm pouring the cold water on your idea, as I always do.
Yeah, but at least this one, it wasn't entirely unrealistic.
Yeah.
No, it's worth, like, if you get the offer, you're not going to hang up the phone. You're at least going to go, okay, well, it's decent value, but the problem, which you alluded to as well, it's the pick is 12 months away.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the sticking point. Yeah, but, exactly. Look, I don't think there's going to be a deal between the Bulls and the Magic in relation to Gordon as much as I'd want to see it. But, you know, as I said before, stranger things have happened, but we shall see. But, look, we've been going on for a bit here, so let's try to wrap up the next few questions that I did receive from listeners in the next 10 minutes or so. So I've got a few here, and let's get through them. So the first one comes in from TNAC23 on Twitter. So random question here, but he asks, what are your thoughts on Terrence Ferguson? Any inside info from Aussie Ties worth going after? So what are TNAC23 sort of referring to here is Terrence Ferguson actually played in the NBL last season, which is the, I guess, the pro league here in Australia. And I don't really have any inside info. I haven't necessarily loved what I've seen from him, OKC. Would you go after him there, Mort?
Oh, I would have, but not right now, because given that Andre Roberson went down, his trade value has gone up from the perspective of OKC. OKC is going to ask for a little bit more to release him, I think. And also, he's 19 and superbly athletic. That in itself is going to cost a lot. Now, I mentioned Justin Holiday going to OKC. If you could build a package surrounding Justin Holiday for Terrence Ferguson and OKC bites on that, I don't think they do, but if they did, sign me the hell up, like, immediately. But I don't think they will.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. They're a capped-out team. They're going to be paying a lot for their roster. They don't have a lot of future picks, so they need some guys on cost-controlled contracts, which Terrence Ferguson is, and he projects to be a 3-and-D player on the wing there. So I don't think they would necessarily give him up, and I don't think a deal exists for the Bulls. But like Mort said, if it can happen, go for it, but I don't think it's possible. So thanks for your question there, TNAC. The next couple coming through are in relation to the draft, and they're all about Trae Young. So from at also Connor on Twitter, he asks, can the Bulls draft Trae Young, and would he be able to play next to LaVine? The guard defense would be so, so bad. Ignoring the Dunn question altogether, would you think about doing it, Mort? Because having them together, LaVine and Trae Young, that is, it would be a pretty fun pairing. So what's your response there to Connor?
Oh, can I just like copy and paste what we talked about last time around regarding Trae Young? Because, the thing here is, defensively, he hasn't been good, but a lot of that has to do with he's a freshman. Like, he's coming from high school to college, and he's being asked to score 30 points a game and average 10 assists, which, by the way, he's doing. So that leaves very, very little energy to play defense. I mean, they are asking so much out of him offensively. We realistically do not have any clue what his defense is like, because he just does not have any sample size to play defense, like, or he has no energy to it, so we have no sample size or no data on his defense. Like, if he goes into private workouts near the draft and he goes to the combine or whatever, and they play like these scrimmages and all that, and he just, because he's surrounded by guys who can score, he starts defending his ass off, like, okay, then I'm in. But right now, like, we only know about 50% of his game, which is incredibly low. What we do know about those 50% is that that's awesome. Like, offensively, he's an NBA guard already. He's amazing. He's going to be one of those guys who's going to average a ton of points, average a lot of assists. So offensively, he's probably already there, which is ridiculous to think about, because he's averaging Jimmy Fredette numbers in his freshman season. I mean, it's not even logical what he's doing. But given we don't know anything about his defense, I'm wary of it. We just don't have any idea so far. I would love to see the pairing offensively, but good lord, I'm so nervous defensively, because Zach LaVine has been dreadful, especially off the ball. Like, he has been so bad that I am going... I've actually put a cap on what I would pay personally if I was the Bulls on Zach LaVine's new deal, which is $15 million a year tops, simply because of his defense. It is so horrific. I'm pretty sure my dead grandmother could rotate better. And combine that with...
this podcast has got really dark.
Yeah. Combining... Well, she could see patterns. Like, she knitted. So she could read and see patterns. Zach can't.
Okay.
Yeah. putting Trae Young into that position, and with us having no clue whatsoever about his defensive capabilities, is not something I'm fond of. But yeah, like he said it, offensively speaking, good Lord, right?
It would be beautiful offensively, but like you said, it is a pretty scary proposition defensively. And I'm going to contradict myself here, because something I've been, I guess, pushing is the fact that the Bulls need to take the best player available with their draft pick, not be considering fit at all. But where I do contradict that take a little bit is the fact that they do have Zach LaVine around, and obviously have Chris Dunn around. And then, you know, if you put Trae Young at point guard with LaVine there at shooting guard, I do worry about that defensively. And even though we haven't seen really, I guess, what Trae Young can do defensively, he doesn't necessarily have the athletic or body profile to suggest he could be a good defender.
Right.
So it does scare me there. So I don't love it, Connor. I don't love their fit together. And another question we did receive about Trae Young is his fit on this roster. So this one comes in from Andy Carnes, and he's asking about the fit on Trae Young on this roster, which we've sort of touched on. But I guess his follow-up question is, would he be able to play shooting guard next to Chris Dunn at point guard? I think that fit is a lot better together than LaVine and Young himself.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Dunn would have to be the shooting guard in that scenario, I think, because I don't think you want to have Trae Young out there guarding twos.
No, Dunn would definitely guard the two, yeah. And I guess they could play a combination of who runs the offense, but
yeah
like, Dunn would definitely guard the two.
Yeah, offensively, it's kind of like Brad Stevens' system, like no position system, positionless basketball. So that I wouldn't worry about it offensively at all. It would strictly be defense. But now you just said something which is interesting. You actually said that, you know, you wouldn't draft for need or whatever, but you would factor in that the Bulls had Dunn and LaVine already. So where does that leave you if the Bulls win number one and Luka Doncic is right there?
So hold that point, because I've got another question around fit. Okay. and with the draft pick. We'll come back to that, because I think it's a really interesting point to raise. But
yeah,
I prefer the fit with Dunn and Young than I do Young and LaVine. But obviously, you've got LaVine entering free agency, and as the Bulls have said, they want him around. They're wanting to pay for him, and as we mentioned before, they're positioning him to be the franchise guy, at least the face of the franchise. So yeah, I don't love it. But another Young question that we did get through, Mort, comes from JFrey4 on Twitter. He asks, can we draft Trae Young outright if he's in the top three? And his follow-up to that question is, do you take him over Bagley and Porter? And, you know, if for whatever reason the Bulls happen to end up with the sixth pick and their Pelicans pick ends up at number 11, if for whatever reason the Bulls are outside of the top three and Trae Young is sort of heading towards that top three, do you make that package deal and try to get a trade there for Young and try to get into the top three to take him?
Oh, a lot of Trae Young love. This is interesting.
Of Trae Young love. I got a few questions here from Trae Young, which I didn't expect, but you know, the Bulls fans are definitely all in on Trae Young, it seems.
Oh, yeah, I mean, look, he's great. I wouldn't package two picks to go up for Trae Young. No, I wouldn't. I would package two picks to go up for DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic. Not that is realistic at all, because no one, if someone else outside of the Bulls wins number one, it's Luka Doncic, and they're not giving him up for the next 15 years. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think that's possible. Or I think it's possible. I don't think you should do it. I should say. And in regards to
drafting Trae Young over Michael Porter and Marvin Bagley? Now, that is a very good question. Over Marvin Bagley? Yeah, probably. Yeah, I probably do that. Over Michael Porter? That's the tough one because he played, what, 2 minutes? I'm not sure. We have no data on Michael Porter as a college player. We would have to solely rely on data from high school. So what you're essentially is going up is what you're debating is, do you take a guy who's averaging 30 and 10 in his first season in college, or a guy who's barely played in college, and then just looking at his physical profile on one, mind you, with back issues, which is incredibly suspect because, or not suspect, that's the wrong word, but that's, it's, I'm a little bit nervous about Michael Porter because if you have back injuries, then it becomes a concern. Those can linger a whole lot and they can ruin a player's body completely. So I'm not sure what you do. I do think you take him over Marvin Bagley because I just see so many red flags with Bagley. But good Lord, Michael Porter, that's the big one. All I can say is I know I'm not taking him over DeAndre Ayton. That's what I can say.
That's fair. That's fair. So I think you've covered that one off nicely. So let's skip ahead and let's revisit that question that you were going to raise to me, because I actually got that question asked to me by Kevin Escalona here on Twitter. He asks, with Nico gone and Lopez likely to be traded, we are probably going to be a high pick. Do you think we should draft for fit or talent? So I think this is an interesting question. I've sort of made my point around it, even though I contradicted myself slightly. I think that Bulls should be taking the best player available. But what do you think?
Never draft for need or, you know, for position. Never. Never, never. That's what free agency is for.
Yeah, definitely not with the top pick.
Oh, yeah. Like, no. I mean, I look, if you are a team that has like 4 or 5 draft picks in a draft, then the last one, sure. Why not? If you felt like you've hit home run on every pick otherwise, sure. But if I was a GM, I would, that would be my religion. That would be, don't draft for need. That's what free agency is for. Draft the guy who you think is going to be the best player, has the best potential, has the best mindset, you know, the best game, whatever, however you want to twist it. Just get the best player, regardless of position. And then if you end up drafting 5 centers, then you work it out somehow. Then you try to develop all 5 and then you trade them off each by making the roster fit. Because that's what you should do. The Sacramento Kings, to their credit, tried this. That just didn't work because they drafted bad players. But yeah, you should always go for best player available. Always. Or best potential available, however you prefer it. And to me, Luka Doncic, like, if you get number one, you don't go, oh, well, we kind of have Zach LaVine at the 2, so we shouldn't draft Luka Doncic. That would, if that happened, like if the Bulls won number one and they did not draft Luka Doncic, and Garpax came out in the media afterwards and said, well, we felt that we wouldn't want to draft a player into Zach's spot, I would probably write a very harsh article where I would call them words that I don't believe yet to exist in the English language.
Because you're Danish.
That's a good point.
No, look, I agree 100%. I think you're definitely right there, but in relation to Doncic, but also about, you know, drafting on talent, not fit, particularly if you do have that number one pick. So hopefully that answers your question there, Kevin. So I got 2 more for you, Mort. So let's try to get these ones quickly. So this one comes from Folks on Twitter. He asks, would the Bulls get a Knicks first round pick for Robin Lopez and Blakeney? I think we both know the answer to this one.
Oh, no. No.
No. No, unfortunately, no. That would be great. It would be beautiful to get that Knicks first round pick, which would definitely be a lottery pick for Robin Lopez and Antonio Blakeney, but it's not going to happen, I'm afraid there, folks. But yeah. Look, keep speaking into existence. This has been my theme for 2018. Let's speak it into existence. And let's try to get that pick, that number one pick for the Bulls. But, you know, if you also want to speak into existence a Robin Lopez and Antonio Blakeney trade for a Knicks pick, then let's do it. But, yeah, I don't think that's going to have any chance of getting up, unfortunately, there, folks. But last question here for you, Mort. And this one's sort of up your alley. It's one of these big trade type ones. This one comes in from at Chicago Bulls 45. He asks, let's just say we trade Dunn for a first round pick, and that trade that we do make for Dunn is for the a lottery pick, and Bulls take someone like Colin Sexton. How do you feel about the Bulls drafting Michael Porter Jr. with their pick, getting in Sexton at number 12, and maybe someone like Robert Williams, with the Pelicans pick? Would you make this move if you were the Bulls and, you know, create a starting lineup of Sexton, LaVine, Porter Jr., Williams, and Larry Markkanen? Would you do that, Mort?
Wow, that's...
This one is definitely a Mort-type question.
Yeah, but wow, that's definitely rookie-loving. It's very specific names, because I know where I stand on certain rookies. And I probably wouldn't target those guys specifically. But I mean, it would at least get the rebuilding off to a pretty interesting start, wouldn't it?
Well, it definitely would be interesting. It would be interesting. It's I'm not sure how realistic it is.
No, I but, don't think
look,
it is.
I like the fact that the Chicago Bulls 45 out here, he's showing some initiative there about acquiring another pick. But it would mean moving Chris Dunn. So I guess it depends on feel about Chris Dunn.
I mean, I know you're against that. I think it's basically a Colin Sexton for Chris Dunn swap.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to reference you a little bit. You and I wrote together a while back, and you mentioned, oh, I wish that Chris Dunn was just 2 years younger. How I wish he was just 2 years younger. Yeah, I mean, Colin Sexton is 19, so you kind of get a reboot at the point guard position, which isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. He's a great scorer. He's got a great physical profile. He's very athletic. He doesn't have the defensive potential that Chris Dunn has, but at the other side of the coin, you can also argue that Dunn is probably pretty close to reaching his ceiling, unfortunately, because of his age. Whereas Colin Sexton has another, 4 to 5 years to reach where he's going. So it becomes a question of where you put your money. Like, do you want to go all in on the future, or do you want to see what Chris Dunn can do?
Yeah, I think that's a good wrap-up of what this trade pretty much entails. I probably don't do this deal. I would rather keep Dunn. I don't think Colin Sexton necessarily falls to, say, pick 12 anyway, so I don't think this trade idea would necessarily work. So maybe if Sexton was around at 12, maybe you can engineer something, but I don't think he's going to be going anywhere close to 12. I think he stays inside the top 10 as per my draft board. But, I like the initiative, as I said before, thinking outside the box. This is what we need, and hopefully the Bulls front office are doing the same. But, Mort, look, I appreciate you coming on. We've gone on long here. We've definitely covered off what the Bulls could be doing at the trade deadline. We've also sort of touched on here what they could be doing on the draft. Obviously, the trade deadline is 48 hours away, but Bulls fans have still got their eyes on the prize here, thinking about the draft, thinking about Trae Young and all these sorts of guys. So interesting to get all your takes. I really appreciate everyone's questions, but I also appreciate you, Mort, for coming on the show. So tell everyone listening where they can follow you online.
They can follow me on Twitter at MSJNBA, and I made that up myself, unlike your handle, Mark.
Don't know what you're talking about, but yes, you can definitely catch Morton at MSJNBA on Twitter, and you can also tune into his NBA podcast,
which is entitled
called Mort.
Yeah,
the NBA Pod,
the NBA
Genius.
Podcast.
Genius.
So I don't know if I ever told you why, but that's because I have two media degrees behind me, and one of the things that I keyed on pretty early was search engine optimization, and I realized that every time an NBA podcast out there was made, it was always called something like the Pick and Roll Podcast or the Fast Break Breakfast or whatever. It was pretty creative, and I kind of searched, and I thought, does anyone just have a podcast called the NBA Podcast? Because that would come up pretty high on Google. And no one did.
Well, there you go. Thinking outside the box, but also thinking very logically. But I did like how you casually just dropped, I've got 2 media degrees, just in a casual sentence there. So very humble of you there, Moore.
I know. The reason I mention it is because currently those degrees are used to nothing because I'm unemployed. And if someone out there was going, you know, I like what he's saying, maybe we should hire him. And I just wanted to let them know, you know, I have the education behind me. So if you're interested.
Oh, well, I'm sure with my platform, my huge reaching platform, that there's a lot of media personnel global out there listening to this podcast and thinking, absolutely, I've really got to hire this Morten Jensen guy.
I know. So, that's why I came on, actually. It was for your global spanning audience. So, intergalactic audience. I'm pretty sure that the Martians are listening in.
They may be, and they're probably the only ones that are going to hire you at the moment.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, by the way, Mark, before we wrap up, really, really quickly, is it okay that I kind of force you a little bit to invite me back before the draft? Because I have some pretty big draft hot takes that I'm pretty sure that you'll love. So
you've already casually dropped the fact that you have 2 media degrees, so you're inviting yourself back on here. So I'm more than happy for you to jump on my platform and expose yourself to the world on my platform come draft time. So I think we can make that reality reality there, my friend. Have you back on come the draft time. But again, I appreciate you jumping on this one with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's always so fun going back to the Dennis Podman well.
Definitely is fun, and hopefully this trade deadline is fun. So Bulls fans will be back to wrap up the trade deadline in the coming days. Hopefully there's some action there for the Bulls, but I'll be back with another pod covering the trade deadline after that. But until then, thank you for joining me.